You are listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app where fun is fast.
Lionel, we've had an email, a very interesting email from Reed Hart, a listener to the podcast. Here's what it says. I'm a podcast listener and friend of the podcast for the last couple of years. I'm also an African-American cyclist and a member of the Minnesota Major Taylor Cycling Club. I was pleased to hear you address the topic of racism in pro cycling and appreciated your interview with Matt Raben. Although I've never raced at any level, I have two thoughts about the problem that I think are important factors that discourage and limit black riders wanting to get into the sport. First, while I've never ridden a bike in the UK, here in the US, I know of no black cyclists who haven't experienced shouted slurs, too close car passes, or other harassments from motorists and pedestrians, or stops by the police. For recreational cyclists like those in our club, this is minimised by the limited number of hours we spend on the bike and our mature ages. I would imagine for young racers in training, it's amplified and discouraging to say the least. Second, as I listen to Mitch Docker's Life in the Peloton podcast, I'm struck that every rider, as talented as they are, has inflection points in their career where they knew someone or received help or advice from someone that helped propel their career forward. This isn't surprising. The same dynamic is true in all professions. Black riders who don't have these relationships and are looked at through stereotypes at best don't have the connections and relationships that would help to move them through the ranks and maximise their potential. Regards, Reed Hart.
Some really interesting points raised there, not least the fact that Reed rides for a cycling club named after the great Major Taylor, Marshall Walter Taylor, who was an African-American born in Indianapolis and who was a world sprint champion on the track at the end of the 19th century and is a hugely important figure in the history of cycling. But it's notable that in more than a century since Major Taylor's days, there are not many other black athletes in cycling for young people to aspire to. And in fact, in 2020, there's only one black rider in the Tour de France peloton, and that's Kevin Reiser of B&B Hotels. Now, over recent months, other sports, notably soccer and the NBA, the Basketball League in America, and plenty of others too, have recognised the Black Lives Matter movement. And as a result of those very visible actions, it's become glaringly obvious that there's been no similar recognition in pro cycling or at this Tour de France.
No, it does feel like cycling. And that really means all of us who work in cycling, including us, should no longer ignore the issue of the lack of representation of the black community, whether that be the black community in France, in the UK, the USA, or anywhere else at the top level of the sport. At this Tour de France, through the sales of Stacey Snyder's mugs and cups, we are supporting two good causes that seek to promote diversity and reach communities which are not traditionally exposed to cycling. But that is also not enough, and it's why I think some of Reed's points are particularly well made, especially about inflection points and the relationships that are so important to any talented and ambitious young sports person. We're going to hear Jonathan Vauters later in this episode address some of these points too. But role models are very important as well. And as you said, Lionel, there's only one black rider in this tour, and that is Kevin Reiser. Francois spoke to him the other day, and we'll hear that interview first, confusingly with Lionel playing Francois Tomazo and asking the questions, and Francois translating the words of Reiser. Then we'll hear from Vauters and TJ Van Garderen, manager and rider respectively at EF Pro Cycling. Both of them had very interesting things to say, and I've obviously thought about this issue as well. Then we'll hear from Manny Arthur, who set up and runs the Black Cyclist Network, and he has the ambition of establishing a racing team and helping to nurture young talent.
Donc on a pas mal de forcément de nos auditeurs qui ont été très sensibilisés par Black Lives Matter.
On a eu fait pas mal de sujets. How did the Black Lives Matter movement affect you?
Si ça m'avait pas touché, ça aurait été compliqué, c'est sûr que.
Well, it would have been surprising if it didn't affect me. It actually hurt me hard. It's a sad story and shouldn't happen again today. I was affected. It shocked me that in 2020 this kind of thing can still happen and shock the whole world. On the other hand, it's good that a movement is taking place worldwide because it moves the old furniture around. It sweeps away old ideas and it's a good thing for everybody.
Sports people have played a great part in the movement. Do you feel close to the NBA or tennis players who protested?
Obviously, sport has had a huge impact with world stars protesting and expressing their views loudly. It's great so they can lead the battle against this kind of act. I'm not a world star, but I try to bring my contribution at my own level and in my own way. But when stars like LeBron James or Lewis Hamilton speak out, it's great to see people of that stature lead the fight.
Unfortunately, you yourself were a victim of racism. We remember insults by Albacini and Moscon. Looking back, what do you think about that?
I think I would have reacted differently if I had been a little bit older. I was taken aback and I was maybe not fully aware of what was happening to me at the age when I was racially abused. But today it's clear that I would have reacted differently and I would not have accepted this kind of attacks.
Do you still feel this kind of prejudice in the peloton at times?
No, not at all. There is no racism in the pro peloton. These were only isolated cases I came across, unfortunately. I feel really good in the peloton. I'm considered as a professional rider doing his job the best he can. I try to react as a sportsman to this kind of attacks, but I'm happy to say that there's nothing to complain about in the peloton now.
There is still a problem of diversity in cycling compared to some other sports like football, basketball or even rugby. Why do you think cycling seems to represent less of a full scale of society?
I don't really like the word diversity. It's not a word that I use. It's probably due to a lack of funding. Continents like Africa try to get into cycling, but lack the money to develop. Some things are taking shape, a bit slowly maybe, but it's coming. I hope that in the future we'll see more black riders in the peloton. It's often a matter of desire and of opportunities to live your dream. 10 years ago, I had the chance to become a pro. I didn't become a pro because I was black, but because I had the physical abilities to do it. I was lucky to meet the right persons at the right moment and to be placed in a position to become a pro.
Nobody around you, your friends, were surprised that you chose cycling and not another sport?
Not at all, because I started cycling at the age of 4, and my relatives and my friends always knew me as a cyclist, so I very rarely had this kind of remarks, except from people who didn't know me well and asked me what I was doing as a living. It's not common to see a black man on a bike, but we have the same place to take in the sport as in golf or football. We have 2 legs and 2 arms like everybody else.
Do you think a role model could help kids get more interested in the sport?
It certainly would have helped if I had won 2 or 3 Tour de France. The media exposure would have been much more important, and it might have helped young black kids try cycling and the hard work involved. I'm a rider in the shade. Only the ones who follow the sports closely know me. But it would have helped me to win greater races to become a role model.
Your parents come from Guadeloupe and there's a real cycling culture there, with the Tour of Guadeloupe being a major event and riders from Guadeloupe making a real career at home. How come they never come to Europe?
It's understandable. It's difficult for them to leave their family cocoon, to come so far from home and their daily life. They ride all year on the same road with the same riders, and there's a kind of comfort. They fear the cold and wet weather in Europe. There have been exceptions like Johan Jen and Ronny Martias, who fought hard to succeed in spite of the distance from their family. That's the way to follow, and I hope that in the future, other Guadeloupe riders will join the pro ranks. I hope I won't be the last black rider in the bunch.
Dans les années à venir, il y aura d'autres Guadeloupéens qui passeront pro, que je serai pas le dernier et qu'il y a la place pour tout le monde.
You are listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app that turns indoor riding into a game. Explore endless roads, race riders from all over the world, and boost your fitness with monthly training plans and structured workouts. Join the world's training playground, where fun is fast. Go to Zwift.com and start your free trial.
Douglas Ryder, team principal, NTT Pro Cycling.
The virtual Tour de France was something that we were able to get involved in and to use as an opportunity to get some visibility for partners, and it was the first time that there was a virtual Tour de France. So it was something that we embraced, and we've always embraced the virtual platform and the Zwift platform anyway as a team through the years of the Zwift Academy, where we've got riders from foreign countries and emerging markets, I guess, that could bid to ride in our team, through the platform. And then of course, when the virtual Tour de France came about, we jumped at it. So it was something that we really focused on for sure. Zwift is an opportunity for riders that are in their off season and where the weather is really poor, to be able to engage in a virtual world in a more meaningful way, and you know, riding their bicycles indoor to stay fit, to focus on some weaknesses, on their cadence, on threshold power, all that kind of stuff, change of rhythm, accelerations, you know, all of those kinds of things we were using the platform for during the lockdown. But also we use it for, you know, at the times when riders are in recovery after an injury, and or in times of engaging with an audience, you know, that that's out there, that that wants to engage with the team, so partners, clients, a fan base. You know, it's nice on the platform, you get a third dimensional view of a rider where you can actually ask them questions in the, you know, kind of in game, and get some responses. So it actually brings the riders also closer to, you know, to people that that want to be associated with them and are able to potentially ride with them in a virtual space. So there's many levels and many areas that, you know, that we absolutely embrace the platform, and where it's added a huge amount of value to us as a team and to the individuals in our team.
Jonathan Waters, manager, EF Pro Cycling.
So first, I think the reason there hasn't been broader recognition is that, you know, that a lot of the countries that are represented in the world of cycling, I don't know, the UAE, for example, I don't know that the Black Lives Matter movement has really touched those areas geographically of the world as much as it has the U.S., obviously. In the U.S., you know, in the U.S., cycling is a very small sport. So even though our professional sports inside the U.S. have definitely recognized that issue and made an effort to you know, really try to change things, I think cycling is it's such a small sport in the U.S. And then the U.S. is such a small country in the world of cycling, you know, that it just really hasn't had that impact. I don't think it's a question of any team and cycling being outright racist. I really don't believe that. I think it's a matter of there are very, very few Black junior riders. There are very, very few Black U23 riders. And so even fewer filter through to the professional ranks. That's to say, there aren't that many choices for a professional team manager to take on. I mean, I think our team is incredibly culturally diverse. We've got Ecuadorians, we've got Colombians, we've got a Native American, you know. But, you know, when it comes down to who would I be able to pick of World Tour caliber that was, you know, a Black American, the options are very few and far between. So how do you correct that? That's the better question, as opposed to say, well, you know, the sort of, the obvious answer is, well, all these teams should just hire more Black riders. Okay, but what if they're not ready for the World Tour? Then you're actually almost hurting them, because you're taking them into races that are over their head, and, you know, they're not ready for it, and then they're shot off the back, and then it's almost embarrassing to them, and it's a bad situation for everybody if they're not ready. So the bigger effort in all of this, to me, is what are we doing in junior ranks? What are we doing in U23 ranks? What are we doing? What are we doing, like, attracting Black athletes to the world of cycling? There's a lot of barriers in cycling. I mean, coaching is a barrier. Equipment is a barrier. There's a lot of, you know, whereas, for instance, football, soccer, whatever we call it nowadays, you know, it's a pair of shoes, and coaching is readily available all around the world. Cycling, you know, it's a very expensive bike. It's a lot of equipment, and coaching is hard to find. Like, real, like, I'm not talking about, you know, some guy that can tell you what to do on Training Peaks on the internet or whatever. I'm talking about someone who teaches you to go around corners and clip in and clip out of pedals, and somebody that, you know, that teaches you how to draft and how to sprint, and, you know, like, real grassroots coaching. I think the availability of that is probably not what it should be in Black communities. And so, to me, that's the you know, if you want to create a great Black World Tour rider, it's you know, it's getting into the Black communities and showing them that cycling is a sport that you know, that you can aspire to, showing it is a sport that is reachable, showing them a sport that there is a community of people that will help them, you know, coach them, move them along to the next level, you know, sponsor them, etc. Like, that's the shortfall that's occurring. It's not, like, at the elite level, it's too late. I mean, at that point, it's too late. It's just, but I just don't see as much outreach as there should be to really inspire black kids to want to be bike racers. Like that's step one. Then you can start looking at, you know, how to create, you know, a Tour de France winner. We certainly have an obligation as a professional team to help those efforts. You know, I mean, end of the day, it's not even an obligation. It's actually self-serving, because if we're helping fund, you know, talent development, you know, eventually we're the beneficiaries of that. I mean, this year, you know, when the Legion of Los Angeles guys did a fundraiser, you know, it was just like our fundraiser that we did, whatever, 3 years ago in 2017. And I thought, okay, like, here's some guys, you know, Corey and Justin Williams, that they really have roots into that community. They're going to be able to identify, you know, a good talent in that region in Los Angeles. They're going to be able to help them. So this money is going to be used for something good. Now, you know, we didn't do a sponsorship from the team because there's some conflicts with Specialized and Cannondale, et cetera, et cetera. But I threw in some of my own money, and people say, oh, that was very generous of you. But in the end, it's self-serving, you know, because I know that money hopefully will be used to, you know, create a, you know, a future champion that can actually, you know, well, they can win bike races.
TJ Van Garderen, rider, EF Pro Cycling.
My feelings on this have evolved a lot because when I was following the NFL back in, I think, 2016, it all kind of started with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem, and that was kind of pre George Floyd, pre Black Lives Matter, and his stance wasn't popular because the reason he was taking a knee was to bring awareness of police brutality and, you know, racial oppression. And I think a lot of white America was maybe a little bit blind to what was actually going on, and it wasn't until George Floyd came about that people actually realized, like, wow, Colin Kaepernick is right. I think he's been vindicated in all of this. So I'm really proud to see that the NFL and the NBA are doing a lot to raise awareness, but I think they haven't done enough, given the fact that Colin Kaepernick was ostracized from the NFL for the stance that he took, and yet he still doesn't have a job. So I don't think they'll have done enough until we see Colin Kaepernick back in an NFL uniform. I do think that cycling could do a lot more to appeal to people of color. I mean, it's tough when you don't see very many people that look like you to be inspired to go join, you know, that sort of club or fraternity or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, cycling, it's called the World Tour. So we're supposed to race everywhere around the world. We do races in China. We do races in the Middle East. We do races in South America. We don't really have a whole lot of racing in Africa. But despite racing in all these different places, there's a surprising lack of diversity in cycling. And you can't say that it's because people aren't fans of cycling. When we go to China, you know, everyone comes and watches us race. And same when we go to Race Tour Colombia, the crowds there were unbelievable. Same when we race Tour of Qatar, Tour of Oman, the crowds there, they're really interested in cycling. So I think if there were more programs or more opportunities, or if we did a race in Africa, I'm sure it'd be the same thing. So if there were more programs or opportunities or just vessels for other countries to get into the World Tour, I think that would be a start. Well, I gotta say, I definitely applaud Riza for, you know, for being out here, and because he's a talented cyclist and he deserves to be here. It's not just because he's brave that he's here. It's because he's a talented cyclist that he's here. But I think about how I might feel if I wanted to go play a pickup basketball game, and I looked at a basketball court and I saw nine other black guys there. and I might feel a little bit intimidated to go join them. I could say like, yeah, I deserve to be here, and yeah, whatever, but I think what would make a more powerful statement is if one of those black guys reached their hand and said, we want you in our game, you're welcome here. So yeah, to have Kevin Reza be the only guy talking about this, it makes a powerful statement, but I think even the more powerful statement is if more white cyclists said, we're happy you're here, you deserve to be here, we welcome you here, and we would welcome more people who look like you here as well.
My name's Manny Alpha, and I'm the founder of the Black Cyclist Network. I started cycling, I think, in 2009, and I didn't really get a spur to create something like the Black Cyclist Network until, I think, 2016 is when I started having general thoughts about something like this, because there just wasn't a space like this. And I found myself, you know, because I sort of reflect back on my experience when I sort of first joined the cycling club, how I found it. And I found it quite an isolating experience. So I wanted to create something like this because there just wasn't a space like this at all for cyclists. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to create a space like this to be a welcoming space for, you know, black and brown riders or who take an interest in cycling, to be able to go, you know, maybe go on Google and just be like, hey, you know what, is there a black cycling club or, you know, club full of black people that I can relate to in London? And that was just the general purpose of it. It really just, for me, it feels like there hasn't been much progress in the sport that we love, that I love. I remember the first time a black cyclist sort of came to mind was in 2011. You know, Johan June was riding for Europcar, and that's when I sort of came across Kevin a little bit. A couple of years later, I came across Kevin Retza, and straight away, I sort of like, you know, I literally was just like, oh my god, you know, I warmed him right away because I looked at him and I thought, oh, here's someone that actually looks like me. He's of similar build as well. So even though we've got nothing in common, we speak different languages. I don't know what his English is like, but I could relate to him straight away. And for me, not having someone like that, you know, it just only being him, you know, after I don't know how many years, you know, it's been like 8 years or so, and there's still really no change. It's disappointing. And for me, to make matters worse, I was actually talking about this today. What's more disappointing is the lack of action. You know, and the lack of acknowledgement. When I say action, I don't mean, oh, Tour de France should, you know, organize this, like, you know, ASO or UCI should, you know, do something drastic to try and, you know, bring in, you know, riders of color. No. When I say just taking action, I just mean, you know, just simple solidarity, you know, just showing that, hey, you are against racism. You stand against, you know, all that's evil in this world, you know, anti-blackness, you know, and that thing, just a simple token gesture like that, not being able to see that in the tour, a display of that, that's just that symbolism really hurts as a black person who follows cycling and loves cycling. It just shows me that, you know, it's either ASO, UCI just don't really care. Or they're afraid to call it out. Even the sport of ice hockey, they've sort of taken some stand, you know, against racism. And it's like, if you're not taking a stand, that, you know, how that comes across to us, that communicates to people like me that you're, you know, that A, you just simply don't care, or, you know, you're sort of indifferent to it, or even worse, you agree with it. Because not taking a stand is, to me, endorsing it. I don't really know Kevin too well, but I see he's a decent guy. And I read an article, I think, about him today, an interview that he gave. It's a lot of pressure. You know, he talked about when, you know, he was, you know, I think 8 years ago, you know, he wanted to speak up, but he was a young man trying to, you know, find his feet. And even though he endured racism, you know, in some of the nastiest form of it, it took him a while to be able to actually step up and say something about it. And that's the pressure that, you know, as the sole Black person, you know, you go through. What we're trying to do is we're not trying to be exclusive. We're an inclusive group. So we've got white members, we've got Black members, we've got male, female, you name it, all different types of religions, no religion, etc. It's just a very harmonious group. But the idea for us is to create that space where a Black rider can come there and not feel like they have to be the best example of the Black person, and not have to be like they have to be a historian on Black culture and every, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's the spot that Kevin Retz is in right now. He has to be, you know, the best example all the time. You know, at the end of the day, to put it quite frankly, racism is not, you know, it's a white man's burden. It's a white construct, not a Black problem. So in order for us to all fight it, you know, I think white allies have to step up and like I said, denounce that kind of behavior. It's a long-term project, and the idea is not just to, you know, be the best club in the, you know, in the world, but the idea is also to help, you know, bring through riders of color from the grassroots, from a young age all the way up to the elite level, to maybe even, you know, producing like a riders for the Tour de France. At the moment, we've got a 10-man race team. It's an amateur team, and we're going to be competing next year in the UK. But the overall aim is to, you know, progress to UCI level, and also at some point to create a women's team as well. Tennille Campbell is another perfect example, you know, of Trinidad and Tobago racing for Team Valka in the women's. She's doing the Giro Rosa. You know, yesterday me and her were talking on Instagram, and I was just like, hey, you know, it'd be great if you could get a picture with Lizzie diving for me, because I love the two of you. And she's like, oh, she's super shy, you know, of approaching Lizzie. So I asked Lizzie if, you know, that, you know, Tanil was going to come over to her, and, you know, if she could just, you know, be, you know what I'm saying, just be a bit more welcoming if she sees it. And Lizzie was like, oh, that's fine. I didn't actually notice, but Lizzie went over to Tanil and it was like, hey, you know, let's take a photo. And then she sent me the photo this morning. I was just like, oh, this is amazing. So, you know, shout out to Lizzie Dagnan. I feel like, you know, there is momentum change, but I don't see it coming from the powers above. I'm seeing it from individuals who've donated to our GoFundMe. So it's a little bit, you know, so many, you know, really, really lovely people just donated to our campaign for the race team, to our GoFundMe. So I'm seeing that from, you know, the grassroots level, and also from, you know, corporations and companies, but not necessarily from the governing bodies, which is really disappointing, because they're the ones that set the tone and set the agenda.